This is J. Lewis Mills, and you are about to be put on the level with J. Lewis Mills. Whether it's truth, controversy, good news, or bad. If it offends you, I'm sorry. If you agree, that's great. We talk about it all here because everything needs to be put on the level. Come in and join the conversation. I promise you'll be glad you did. Thank you very much. You got me once again, J. Lewis Mills, and you are on the level with J. Lewis Mills. I hope you all had a great week. I hope you all were able to create yourself a good week. Having my own show, I have the option of having basically whoever I would like to on as a guest. Sometimes I have guests on to talk about and speak to current events. But today's show is one of those that I'm able to have because it's my show. As you all know, because I've spoken about it a few times, I am a very big WWE fan. And my guest today is one of my favorite, if you want to call her a villainous diva. But my guest today is one of the, in my opinion, one of the original WWE divas. She worked with one of my favorite wrestlers, John Bradshaw Layfield, and her name is Amy Weber. Amy, as I said, she was a WWE diva. She was also an actress, a producer, a singer. She has a new single out right now called On and On. We will be able to play that a little later on in the show today. But right now, I don't want to hesitate anymore. I would like to introduce you all and welcome into the conversation one of my favorite WWE divas, Miss Amy Weber. Amy, how are you? And thank you very much for joining me today.
Hi, J. Lewis. Thanks so much for having me on today. I'm doing fantastic. Thanks so much.
Awesome. So let's just start the conversation off with asking you about your time in the WWE. How did that all come about for you, and what was it like to work with John Bradshaw Layfield?
You know, it really was an interesting sort of story. I was doing pretty well in Hollywood. I was really one of the lucky few that never had to have a regular job, so it wasn't like I was waitressing and then, you know, working during the day as an actress or a model. I was so fortunate, but I was getting really close to a lot of really big movies. So it was between me and Anna Faris for the movie, Scary Movie, that Miramax had done. And it was like the studio went with me, and then the director, Keenan Ivory Wayans, went with Anna. And then it was like I was up for something else. And then it was like, oh, they went with the other person. I was just getting so close to so many things, and this frustration started to build. So when a friend of mine said, listen, they're having this thing called a diva search for this WWE. Do you want to go in? And he thought he was just making a joke. And I said, yeah, I'll go in. And he's like, what? You'll actually do it? I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not? So for me, it was sort of the epitome. It's like I ran away and joined the circus. That's the closest thing that I could ever liken the experience to. Not because it's a circus, like it's not like a serious thing. It's just you're on the road. I mean, you're living the life of a carny, a carnival person, because you're constantly in a different city, literally like every couple of days. So I would come home, I would unpack, I would repack, I would get on a flight and go and tape the shows that we would tape. So it was really interesting. I had to go through the whole process, the elimination process of the diva search, and that was, you know, very interesting in itself. But I learned a lot about who I was and how much fortitude I had. And it was fun. It was really a fun experience. And most of the girls that were in the diva search were really great ladies, and I got to, you know, make some lifelong friendships out of that. So that's kind of how that all started. And then once I was in the top 10 and then kind of got eliminated, which I don't think people really, this is probably the first time I remember telling this, but I was actually on a show where I had to arm wrestle, and I was arm wrestling the girl, Sunny, who ended up winning, the girl with the red hair. And I tore my rotator cuff because the way she came up and over, she ripped on live TV. And then they poured chili all over me. So I was thinking, like, oh, my gosh, because the pain was so bad, I wanted to throw up, plus the chili. I was just like, and I'm thinking, I cannot throw up on live TV. So I had to somehow make it back to Gorilla, which is the place that they call right before you go and you enter onto the stage. So I'm like, just make it to Gorilla. Just make it to Gorilla. Like, literally, I made it to Gorilla and was like, boom, passed out. So I remember there was a guy named Sergeant Sarge or something. He basically
He's a WWE trainer, right?
Yes, he picked me up, and basically, like, they got me to the hospital. So it was a crazy experience. But anyway, so after that, I was eliminated. I think I got fifth or fourth. And then I got a call from Vince McMahon asking if I wanted to come and, you know, be a regular part of SmackDown. They really were looking for sort of like the Heather Locklear of the WWE, somebody that could come in and kind of cause some controversy and stir things up. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'm ready to go. And that's how it all started.
Wow. What was it like to get a call from Vince McMahon? Did it hit you like, dude, this is Vince McMahon? Or was it just like just getting a regular telephone call for you?
No, it was, I mean, the guy, he, if you've ever been in the presence of Vince McMahon, just the type of just strong personality that he is and the charisma that really exudes from this man. No, it was not, no phone call I'd ever gotten in my life. I mean, I had worked with a lot of celebrities, so it wasn't like I was like, oh my gosh, I'm awestruck, but just being a business person myself and just the respect that I had for him and him taking the time out to ask me, it was a great call. It really was a really wonderful conversation with him, and I was on board immediately.
And how long were you on SmackDown, and who would you say your favorite person? I know I said that you were JBL's valet or part of his entourage, but was JBL your most favorite person to work with? If not, who would you say was your most favorite on-air personality to work with?
You know, there's probably a couple. So, interesting enough, Coach, who I just heard is coming back as an announcer, was really great to me, and I got to work closely with him. But also Big Show. Show was just such an incredible human being. He's the nicest person ever. He really helped train me. He's the one who got me on the ropes and was really starting to train me to actually have like my first real match with Joy.
Yeah.
Which is funny. I mean, Show is like what, 5 feet taller than me, but just a gentle giant, this guy. And he really did care about my well-being. And I mean, JBL was really great and he's a nice person, but he definitely is like, he doesn't really get too, like, personally involved. It's kind of like he comes to work and then, you know, he goes home. He doesn't really take his work home with him. And so it's not like I really got to know JBL on such a personal level. He's just smart as a whip. The guy is really intelligent human being. But he was really great. Rey Mysterio was really nice to me as well. Really was trying to teach me a lot of things. So, but Show, I think, watched out for me more than anything. He was like a really, like a big brother for me.
And I remember your match with Joy. What did it feel like? How nervous were you when you had your wrestling match? Because this was your first, if I'm not mistaken, this was your very first wrestling match ever on television. So what was that like right before you went out? And before you answer that, let me explain to the listeners. When she talks about the gorilla position, there was a wrestler by the name of Gorilla Monsoon, and to pay homage to him, they called the place where you, right before you go out, when you see the wrestlers come through the curtains, that's called the gorilla position. So what was the feeling like? Were you really nervous? Were you excited? What was that whole thing?
I mean, I think it was just every emotion possible was sort of just zipping through my body. But you know, Vince is really hands-on. He's always got his ears on. So I just remember I looked over and just made eye contact with him, mm-hmm. and he just sort of gave me this look like, you got this. And so it just, I know, anytime you go out in front of a crowd of, you know, 20, 30, 40,000 people, and you know you're live on TV, so you can't really mess up, it's going to be a bit nerve-wracking. So, you know, especially coming from the world for me, it's like, you know, if I mess up, I could do another take. But when it comes to WWE and being on SmackDown, that's it. You got one shot. I mean, you get it right or you don't.
And how did you feel you did after your match was over? How did you feel you did in the match? Were you happy with the match? Were you like most of us as actors, after you do it, you're like, oh, wow, I wish I would have done this different, or I could have done this different? Or were you just like, you know what, I'm good?
Well, no, remember, Joy never showed up for the match, so I won by default. So
yes.
We never actually got our match.
Okay, so I probably asked that question the wrong way.
What I meant was...
When you came out and you were in the ring and you were waiting, and were you okay with how it all went down? I guess I should ask you.
No, I wanted to fight. No, I had worked so hard. I had worked so hard for that match. I was ready. I was ready to go, and then she didn't show up. I was like, are you kidding me? And she was like in a trunk of a car or something. I was like, go put her in the trunk. Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah, it was fun.
Now, what was it that caused your departure from the WWE, or why did you end up leaving the WWE, if I may ask?
Okay, well, this isn't going to be a very popular answer, but like your intro said, which I loved, you may be offended. Sorry.
Exactly.
But you know what? Listen, I was raised in the Midwest, and I was raised on a farm. I used to race motorcycles, so I've always been around guys, and I've always given respect and gotten respect back. So for the most part, most people in the WWE are incredibly respectful, and they're great people, and, you know, they're wonderful entertainers and great sportsmen. But there's a few bad apples, and there's a few bad apples in every business that you're in, right? You're gonna going to be people at your job that maybe are just going to give you a hard time, but they're not going to be nice to you, or they're going to be disrespectful to you. And so, unfortunately, what happened was we were going back and forth with my contract, and it was crazy because they had already scanned me for my action figure. I had already, all the pictures had been taken for the video game. So, I mean, they were ramping me up. And it was tough, too, because I have to tell you, when you come in and you get TV time right away, guess what? You're taking TV time away from another diva or another wrestler.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's not always going to bode well with everybody. So you're going to ruffle feathers. The minute you come in and you're, like, getting shot to the top and you didn't so-called pay your dues like everyone else that goes to Orlando or goes to all the different training centers, right? And they're doing just like house shows all the time. People are not going to really like maybe take to you, even if you're the sweetest person in the world, which I fancy myself I am. People are going to kind of be upset. And so we did a 10-city tour, and that included, oh my gosh, it was like two shows in Hawaii, and then we went to Japan, and then we were coming back to Alaska. It was a crazy schedule, and they had rented an entire plane, like a 747, to fly all of the wrestlers. And so you could only take a select few. So, of course, just the fact that I was chosen, I'm sure, didn't make some people happy. But regardless, I was going, and I was there, and we did our shows in Hawaii, and everything was fine. And then we went to Japan, had a great time in Japan. Listen, there's nothing better than walking down the streets of Tokyo with Big Show. Because I've been to Japan before, and they're not a super, you know, well, nowadays they are, but back then they weren't a super tall community of people. And Show is like a very large, giant man. And just to see him walking down the street, and the people knew his move. They were like, oh, you know, doing his whole thing. And it was so much fun. And so then what happened was I was rehearsing, and we were practicing, and I was in the ring, and I was practicing with Joy, and Joy was supposed to pretend kick me in the stomach because we were just rehearsing. And she actually kicked me really hard. And she didn't mean to. She felt so bad. But I went flying out of the ring, and I missed the rope. I couldn't break my fall. And I landed on my tailbone, and we got it checked out, and it was just a really bad bruised tailbone. And so the coach said to me, go into the locker room, get some ice, and get two Advil or two ibuprofen, whatever it was, and then just get, like, go rest. And so apparently there were two wrestlers that were upset that I took two of their ibuprofen and a bag of their ice. This is what ticked them off. So this is what set them off. So on the way from Japan to Alaska, everyone was sleeping. Like, all the main roster was, like, all, like, in first class, and the divas were all sleeping across three chairs because there was enough room for us to sleep. We were all really tired. And so, unfortunately, I'll call it out. Randy Orton came up behind my chair when I was sleeping, and he bumped it so hard that it flung me onto the ground of the plane.
Wow.
And so I stood up and I go, what is your problem? And he was like, he goes, oh, you're going to learn. You're going to learn, bitch. And I was like, oh, okay, what am I going to learn? You know what I mean? Like, what did I do? I had no idea what I had done at that time. I hadn't found out that they were upset about the ibuprofen. And so then went back to sleep, and then there was a wrestler named Edge, and he decided to pour a drink on me when I was sleeping. Classy, really classy. And I
really?
Thought, I didn't, what did I do? So I stood up on the chair, eye to eye to him, and I go, you want to go? Let's go. You know what I mean? You want to fight? I'll fight you. You know what I mean? Like, what? Really? You have that much disrespect? Like, what did I do to you? Like, you're a man. Like, it was just this terrible. And so, unfortunately, Vince wasn't on that plane. Vince had actually had gone running out to the ring, and he had snapped, I think, his quad muscles. And so his son was on the flight. And when we got there, we got to, who was the head of talent relations? Oh, my gosh. He's on the Divas show now. Jimmy something. Anyways, he was there. And then when we landed in Alaska, see, I had never signed my contract. We were still in negotiations. I said, I went up to Vince McMahon and said, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it. And I said, it was nice knowing you. And he goes, what are you talking about? Amy, where are you going? And literally I was like, peace out. I got it was snowing. It was 3 a.m. I grabbed a taxi. I said, take me to the nearest hotel. I booked myself a flight back to California. And that was it. Because I was just like,
wow.
Honestly, why would someone treat me like, it's just like, okay, fine, you know, it's a boys club, and I've heard that they've shaved people's eyebrows and stuff like that, but this was just blatantly disrespect because I had taken two of their ibuprofen, and I didn't deserve ibuprofen because I hadn't paid my dues. That's basically what it came down to.
Okay, so I don't know if it was this situation or if there was another diva that Randy Orton had done something to, but I remember
he got suspended. Did something in her suitcase.
When he got suspended, that wasn't because of you.
No. This was a girl that wasn't even a diva. They were trying some people out. Her name was Rochelle, and he pooped in her suitcase.
I'm sorry, he did what?
He pooped in her suitcase. I know, classy. I'm telling you. It's
okay.
Like, really?
So
yeah,
after this happens, and after you get back to California, did Vince try and reach out to you to find out what was wrong and to apologize, or did you just not hear from him?
Yeah, no. Talent relations. Everyone kind of reached out, and I guess at that point, I just have to say, I can't work in a workplace where, like, you can be that disrespected and nothing happens. Like, there was no, he didn't get suspended. Like, nothing happened because, like, Vince wasn't there. And it just was like, there was no, I don't know. For me, it's just like, if you do something, you should be held accountable. And
absolutely.
Even though it wasn't like, okay, they didn't kill me. They didn't do anything. I mean, they didn't do something so bad as poop in my suitcase. It wasn't like there was sexual harassment. It was nothing like that. But it was just, oh, disrespectful over what? I didn't do anything. It was just, and the people were like, oh, it's because there was some flyer and people were saying, like, you worked at a strip club. And I'm like, no, that's not what happened. What happened was, yes, I modeled it in Japan, but I'm like, there was a flyer going around, but it was from a catalog from a U.S. company that I modeled for 4 years called Lake Avenue. So someone stole my photo and put it on a flyer for like a gentleman's club. And so they're like, oh, they thought that's why I quit. I'm like, I can take ribbing. I knew I was not a stripper. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, yes. I can take, like, because JBL was like kind of like making fun of it and was like, oh, I see why now you're so popular in Japan. I was like, what are you talking about? And he showed me. I'm like, oh my God, they stole that from Lake Avenue. I knew exactly what the shot was. I showed my lawyers the exact catalog. They went after the company, whatever. But it was like, yeah, you can rib me. I can take it. But I'm not going to have a drink poured on me when I'm sleeping. And I'm not going to have someone like literally push me out of my seat onto the floor.
Yeah. Now, yeah. My next two or my... I'm going to try and wrap it up on your whole WWE thing because you have so much more that you've done after that. But did you watch the Royal Rumble, which was just this past weekend? What do you think of the divas or the women's wrestling now in the WWE? And would you go back today if you were asked?
Oh gosh, okay, I didn't see it, but I heard they brought Tori back. Tori,
yes.
Wilson, and I love her. She's yes. awesome. She's with an agency that actually I helped kind of create in Los Angeles.
Okay, so the question I was asking you, and I apologize for that, Amy, the question I was asking was, and you told me you didn't get a chance to watch the Royal Rumble this weekend, but would you go back if they asked you to today, presently?
You know, honestly, for no other reason than I have two great, you know, kids. I have twins that are 8 years old. I just can't imagine being able to live the lifestyle and the dedication of time that it takes to be that kind of entertainer. So the answer would be no. There's no way I could go back. I would be honored. I'd be flattered, but I'm old.
Well, we're all getting up there, but I'm pretty sure you could still hang with the divas of today. They brought Lita back. They brought Tori back. They brought Trish back. They brought Jack.
Did they really?
Yeah,
oh my
gosh. Brought they brought Jacqueline back. Lundra Blaze said she wanted to come back, but she was just they just had her as a commentator. I don't know how much, Amy, you watch UFC, but do you have any opinion on Ronda Rousey becoming a full-time WWE wrestler now?
Yeah, listen, I know she's going to get a lot of hate for that, but honestly, that is such a natural progression for her.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I mean, honestly, her UFC career is pretty much done. I mean, I don't think mentally she could ever recover from that loss.
Either one of them.
No. And so she's so athletic and she's knows how to fight. And obviously she knows what it's like to also, you know, have fight game day face. You know what I mean? So
yes.
I think it's great. Listen, I think she's going to bring a whole, obviously she's not going to bring all the fans with her because some of them are, you know, not that happy about it, but I think she's going to bring a lot of new, fresh fans to the WWE, and I think that's fantastic for that organization.
So let's fast forward. You're out of the WWE. What was next? What did you do? What happened after the WWE? I know that you have a pretty extensive film and TV career. So how did that go for you? And was it a big transition from WWE?
I think before I was in, luckily I'd had a pretty good career in the
yes.
entertainment industry, which is why I think Vince, you know, kind of zoned in on me, knowing that I could probably handle the mic and everything that went with it and the pre-tapes and everything. So I did go back to some of that, did more TV, more films. I ended up kind of starting my singing career, which I had wanted to do forever. I ended up becoming a Billboard recording artist.
Mm-hmm.
I released Kingston and called Dance of Life, and
did really well. I did a lot of performances, got like top 10 Billboard Hot 100, won like a lot of things, which was great. And then I don't know, a lot of people don't know that I'm a cancer survivor. So I was told that I would never have children, and I didn't really think that was in the cards for me. And I ended up meeting a really great guy. He's my best friend, and we got married. And by the grace of God, we're, you know, and modern medicine, we're blessed with, you know, two miracle twins that were never, ever supposed to make it into this world. So, you know, they became a really big part of my life. And I started selling houses because, for me, I didn't have a great home life when I was a kid. And being able to kind of help people get a home that feels safe for them and safe for their children means a lot to me. So, you know, I still do things here and there. I just released a song that I've had for over a year that I did with Romeo Miller, which is Master P's son, Lil Romeo. I know people remember him, but yeah, I think he's on a show called Love and Hip Hop, Growing Up Hip Hop, maybe. He's a great guy. I did an anti-bullying PSA with him and met him, and he and I collaborated on a song. I have another song with Too Short that's out there. So, you know what? I think, I don't know that I could ever let go of music, because it's just something that, I mean, think about it. When you go to work out, you listen to music, right? When you're in a bad mood, you listen to music. I mean, music is just the, it's just the background of all of our lives. And it can take me from a bad mood to a good mood and, you know, four or five bars of that music. So I think that, you know, I could let go of the wrestling, and I could let go of the acting and producing, and but singing, I think, will always be a part of my life, as well as real estate.
So getting back to going, taking a step back a little bit, your album was called Let It Rain, and you were on the Billboard, you were on Billboard's top list for about a month, right? And then you it was released internationally?
Yes.
Where was it released internationally? Do you remember?
I think pretty much everywhere. United Kingdom, China, Japan, Australia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then your single that you have out now that we're getting ready to listen to, On and On, you met Romeo. I met his dad at a, I don't know, it was a launch party for some magazine. And I met his dad, and I got to tell you, he's one of the coolest guys. You know, I've been able to meet a lot of different celebrities, but I have to say, Master P was one of the nicest, most giving celebrities that I met. So you met Romeo when you did an anti-bullying PSA with him?
I did, yeah. Master P is like the OG. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's the real
deal,
and that whole family is lovely. I mean, Romeo is just an awesome guy, and we filmed the PSA at a high school, and I mean, these high school girls were going bananas over this
crazy
guy, and he sat and signed every single one of their folders, took pictures. I mean, just he's a true gentleman and a really talented guy, and I'm so blessed that, you know, he laid down some tracks for me on this song, and I think it turned out really well.
Before we listen to the song, do you have any lead-in for it? Do you have anything to say about it, or do you want us to just go right to it?
No, I think we should just take a listen.
Okay. All right, Doug, if you can, go ahead and play Amy Weber's new release, On and On.
Me with your smile, girl, I didn't know he was a killer. Damn, where you from, girl? I'm trying to take you to my world. Take the keys to the whip, you ain't gotta pay the rent again if you my girl.
Tell me, boy, where have you been?
What up?
Make this floor feel like heaven.
So.
Turn me on and on again, on again, on again, on again, on again.
Ooh.
When I look to your tonight, on tonight, on tonight, on tonight, on tonight.
Too low, then I turn it up. Just make sure the music goes on and on. Let's cheers to the future, raise your cup. I'm trying to migrate to your land like a pirate. From Miami to Australia to the Solomon Islands. I'm trying to show you things, a whole lot of things. With my diamond chains. Welcome to my world, baby girl. When we go out to eat, the chef know my name.
So tonight, we're gonna take our love to the sky.
That's hot. That's hot. Yeah. I like that. I like that. I can see that song playing. I mean, you know, I live here in LA. I could see that song playing in almost every club, and every chick that's in that club, when that song comes on, is going to grab her girlfriend and jump on the dance floor. That's a hot song.
Thank you. I co-wrote it with the Jackie Boys, and man, they're an awesome writing team. They won a Grammy for a song that they did with Madonna, and they've kind of worked with everybody. So it was really nice being able to co-write, you know, the song. I mean, listen, there's a lot of really great writers out there, and it's really great to just get a song and go into the studio, and you've got everything laid down for you, and, you know, you just go in and but to be able to write, you know what I mean, and to write stuff. So I've pretty much co-written every song that I've released, which is great because, you know, it becomes really personal and it's easier to get in there and, you know, I don't need to lay down a scratch. I don't need, you know what I mean? I know what I want to do with it. And so, yeah, it's great.
What was the inspiration? What was your inspiration to write this song, and what does On and On mean to you? Like, what the lyrics of the song, what does that mean to you?
You know what it is? I got to the point in my life where I think I just was taking everything so seriously. You know what I mean? Like, I just got in this place. It was weird because after I got through the whole cancer, everything was just really lighthearted for me. I wanted just a really fun song that basically just talked about, you know, that you can just go and you can still have fun. Everything still goes on, you know what I mean? But the fun can still go on and on. So I think for me it was just a relief. Like a release that I needed, that just to remind myself that just don't take yourself so seriously.
Yeah. Well, that is, as I, you know, I just said that it's a hot song, but it's also, in my opinion, it's a refreshing song and it's an inspirational song. And, you know, I've done several shows, Amy, about physical wellness or mental wellness. So, you know, I didn't know, and thank you for sharing it with me, that you are a cancer survivor. And I always have people on my show that I feel can inspire others. So what words of inspiration would you have for someone that is going through the dealings of cancer right now? What can you say to people to kind of uplift them and inspire them that you made it? You are, thank God, you are healthy, and they can have the same, you know, they can have the same results as you.
You know what it is? I feel like, I don't know if people understand just how strong your own mind is. Your mind is so strong you can yes. make yourself sick. Your mind is so strong you can actually heal yourself. Yes. Or you can help whatever is happening to you, whether that's a Western medicine and Eastern medicine, a combination of the two, you can help those medicines heal you. I mean, for me, it was like I had a choice, lay down and die or get up, and I got up. You know what I mean? I didn't want to die. I wanted to get up. I just felt like I had so much more to contribute to this life. And I wanted to help people. I finally went on the show, The Doctors, and I kind of talked about the cancer. My mom took a drug when she was carrying me, which caused my cancer, which also caused me to be like almost completely infertile. And that's why, you know, at 21, you know, doctors said, you'll never be a mother. So, you know, I had to like go. There was this monkey on my back, like, okay, like, I'm not really a woman. I can't give someone what they want, which would be to be a father. So who would want me? I'm broken, mm-hmm. you know? And so, and the thing of it is, like, it's weird because I finally had to realize, like, there's nothing wrong with me. Don't ever say you're broken. You know what I mean? Don't put that out into the universe. Don't put that out at all. And so I spent many, many nights doing visualization and just visualizing my cancer as an apple. And I was eating away at that cancer. And I firmly believe that, like, I started making progress of starting to get rid of it and just put, you know what I mean? It's like, you can't give up. You have to know that, like, life is worth living and you have to fight for it. And you can't put it out there that.
How devastating was it? And I understand, you know, people think differently at 21 than they do at 31, 41, whatever the case may be. But just when you heard that initial, and again, thank God the doctor was wrong, but how devastating was it for you to hear? Because I know I'm sure I have some listeners that could be possibly going through the same thing you went through at 21. So how devastating was it to hear you'll never be a mother?
It was terrible. It was like some of the worst words to ever come out of someone's mouth. I mean, just the thing is, like, you don't know if you want that choice, but to have that choice taken away from you. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Here's the thing. Like, and that's why, like, for me, you know, I didn't think I would ever get married because I didn't really need a husband. I was doing very well financially on my own. You know what I mean? Yes. I had invested. I had, like, 9-10 houses in L.A. I had renters. I was really being smart about my money and playing the stock market. And, you know, I just was like, I just didn't want to get involved with someone that I had to support. I just wasn't really finding my equal. And when I met my husband, the interesting thing he said to me was, you know, they've said no to you, but have you ever tried? You can't take it at face value. If someone says you can't take it at face value, you have to investigate. And listen, I moved mountains. I did stuff that no one even knows is out there. I put other people's white blood cells into me to trick my body into thinking it wasn't my own body, which could put me into cardiac arrest. So there was a woman with an EpiPen ready to, like, restart my heart. I mean, but I wanted it. And if you want something bad enough, you'll make it happen. You'll find a way. That's the thing. You know what I mean? You'll find a way. If you want it bad enough, that's you'll make it happen. You'll find that path. And that's what I did. So.
And so let's talk a little bit about these two jewels that are in your life now. How did you feel, like, when you first found out that you were carrying? How did that feel to you? Did you feel like a winner? Did you feel like you overcame one of the biggest mountains? How did you feel when you found out that you were pregnant?
I don't even know how I could put into words. It just seemed like a dream. It just was when you hear the heartbeats and you're just just overwhelming. And the crazy thing is, people are like, you know, I created this pajama line because my kids came very early. I mean, like, everything that could have gone wrong in this pregnancy did go wrong. And I mean, we handled it one step at a time. But, you know, I ruptured at 27 weeks. I had to go into the high risk. I stayed pregnant they kept me pregnant another month. I delivered at 30. My daughter's heart stopped. They had to restart my daughter's heart 3 times. They both had holes in their hearts. She was 2. I mean, just so many problems. But it's like, you know, being in, like, the NICU, it's like, I couldn't find any great pajamas for them that, like, were soft and didn't irritate their skin. So I kind of, like, created this new pajama line. But it's funny because people say to me, like, oh, my God, those are your kids, you know, on your pajama line, and they're so beautiful. But the really great thing is, like, I just think they're really good people. They're 8 years old, but, I mean, I was drying my hair the other day, and my son said to me, Mom, are you hot? Do you want a water? And then, you know, like, I'll get pajamas, right? And, like,
yeah.
I'm a very thrifty person. You know, I'll spend money when I want to on certain things. But other things, like, listen, I'm a Target person. I love Target. You'll find I ruptured my water at Target. Okay, that's how much I love Target. And so, you know, I like buy pajamas from Target. And my son will say to me, Mom, are those new pajamas? I go, and he goes, Mom, you're so beautiful. You look so good. Like, it's like, I want Target pajamas. And this boy is like, he's just good. You know what I mean? Like, there was, even in preschool, I got a call from a mother, and she goes, I need to talk to you about your kids. And I thought, oh, gosh.
Uh-oh.
I think I have good kids. Like, what could this be about? And she said, some little boy threw sand in her daughter's eyes. She goes, and your children took care of my daughter. Your daughter took her to the water fountain. Your daughter, at 4 years old, washed my daughter's eyes out. And your son told the little boy, you ever do that again, you're going to be sorry. And then he went and he got the teacher. And I thought, oh my, this is the best thing. You know what I mean? So, yes, I feel like I was blessed with really beautiful kids, but they have a heart of gold, and they care about people, and they're empathetic like me, and it's all I can ask for. So I just feel like they're here for a reason, and, I mean, I really fought hard to have these kids and to bring them into this world, and, you know, I'm just, by the grace of God and modern medicine, they're here, and I can't wait to see what they're going to do in this world.
Yeah, I was looking forward to meeting them before, but I now absolutely look forward to meeting them that much more, because if they are that present minded at this age, you're right. I could just imagine what they're going to go on to. And you mentioned a pajama line. The pajama line that you came up with was inspired by your kids.
Yeah, because when you're in the NICU, listen, you know, you're trying, their skin is so sensitive. I mean, they had, like, jaundice and all these things. And it's like, you know, you go try to find pajamas for kids, and they're scratchy, or they've got these cartoon characters on them that the underside is, like, scratching, and they'll get, like, a rash. And so I thought, there has to be a pajama out there that's, like, super soft, that doesn't have chemicals, and isn't sprayed with all this stuff. And I couldn't find it. And I thought, you know, one day, well, I'm going to create this pajama line. So I created a line out of bamboo. It's got this thing called a flatlock stitch, which means that there's no extra fabric anywhere that could itch, like the armpits or the legs or the knees or whatever it is. So I just got top of the line everything, and I designed them. They come with a matching stuffed animal, so they kind of come like with the pajama rolled up in a hug in the stuffed animal's arms.
That's cool.
Because, you know, what kid doesn't like a stuffed animal? So, it's listen, again, I really love helping people with their homes, and it's for me, it is a labor of love, but creatively, I always have to be doing something, and the fact that I was able to create this line on my own and, you know, have other kids sleep, you know, get a good night's sleep without any worry that there's some crazy chemicals or scratching them, they're very breathable, is, I don't know, it's nice I'm being able to live, I guess, the best of both worlds.
How long did it take from the first time you got the thought of making the pajamas? How long did it actually take for you to hold a pair of in your hand and say, you know what, I came a long way. This was once just an idea, but now I made this a reality. How long did that whole process take?
Once I started sketching, it was a year and 3 months until I actually had the pajama in my hands. Because it was just, you know, and it was funny because I remember I was working with a supplier and they said, oh, you know, 100% organic cotton. I said, okay, let's go that route. But then they put the design on it and they sent it to me. And I said, well, this doesn't feel the way I wanted it to. And she goes, I know, but Amy, if you go with a different fabric, I'm like, listen, I want to go with bamboo. And she goes, you're going to take 5 steps backwards. And I said, listen, I don't want to do it if it doesn't feel the way I wanted it to feel. And the thing I envision, I'm not doing this necessarily for like a profit. I really want to put a great product out there that I can be proud of. So take 5 steps backwards. You know what I mean? It's like it's like with anything, even the houses that we sell, it's like, if it's not exactly, I mean, like, I'll see houses online and, you know, like, you'll see the shower has like 500 shampoos. Listen, I have 500 shampoos too, but I'm not going to put a photo of my shower with 500 shampoos when I'm selling it on the internet.
It's like, absolutely.
I mean, things that I'm really specific with, you know, so it's like, you want to be proud of what you're doing, and there's like a level of, I don't know, that I want to be at in everything that I do, so... they finally made it, and they're here, and people love them, and the parents tell me that the kids are like, I want to wear the pajamas. They're like, they're in the laundry. You just wore them last night. They're like, I don't care. Wash them. So they're definitely in high rotation for the people that have received them.
So with a singing career, with being a mother, with having a pajama line, how in the world do you also have time to be a successful real estate agent in the Mecca, what I think is real estate, Los Angeles?
I know. I was lucky. I just got my broker's license, and I did about $61 million in real estate last year. That's my almost fourth year in real estate. So, you know, it's like, do what you love, and you'll never work a day in your life. You also have to kind of, like, run your day. You can't let your day run you. So
yes.
I really, like, as methodical and ridiculous as it sounds, I plan out every single hour of my day. And that includes, literally, there's time with my children that, I'm sorry, I'm not picking up my phone. I'm not going to listen. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to look at my text messages. I'm going to be 100% present for my mm-hmm. kids. And that they have their time blocked out throughout the day when they're not in school. So, but you just make it work. You know what I mean? I've got a great partner, my sister-in-law, that, you know, she and I make a really good team, and we've got a great concierge service that we offer. So I think if you offer a good product and you're honest with people and they know you really care about them, I think that success will always come your way when it comes to that type of business.
How early does Amy Weber's day start, and when does Amy Weber's day end?
Well, normally I start around 5 a.m., but I have two dogs, so every now and then a little bit earlier than 5 because my chocolate lab loves mornings. Do you know that dogs can tell time? This is crazy to me.
Dogs can actually tell time.
Yeah, I read this whole thing about it. I thought, that's the dumbest thing I've ever thought of. But then I'm thinking, okay, wait a minute. First of all, he's literally, like, nudging me with his nose same time every morning. And then he's in the kitchen the exact time that he eats twice a day. Like, I'm telling you, the dog knows how to tell time. There's something about, like, the way the air smells or something. I was like, that's such BS, seriously. But I'm starting to believe that it's true. So, yeah, probably around, like, 5:30. And then I'm an early listen. I like to sleep early. I love my sleep. That's the one thing that will never change about me. So I try to get to sleep before 10 so I can at least get up and get a workout in the morning. I can't usually start a day without a run or something. If I go for a run, I just want to, you know, thank God and just be grateful for my life, grateful I woke
yes.
up. I mean, honestly, when you come through cancer, when you wake up on it every day, you won the lottery. Right? Because you get another day to hopefully inspire someone, change someone's life in a positive way, whether that's just smiling at someone that you pass in the grocery store. And that's the way that I try to live my life every day.
Now, these next questions are really for the listeners and the fans. But when, and I'm going to say it in third person, when Amy Weber has time to watch television, what do you like? What do you watch? What are you interested in watching?
Oh, you know what I love? American Ninja Warrior is such an awesome show. My kids love it. I want to build a whole thing in the backyard. I want to go get plywood and build like a whole thing for them to climb on. I love that show. I also love, mysteries. I like Blind Spot. I like a lot of those shows. I'll watch 2020. And I usually like check USA Today on my phone because I like to see kind of what's happening with the world, even if it's depressing. I try not to watch the news in the morning. I'd rather watch a cartoon all day long than to have to sit and watch the news because it's so depressing. But listen, you got to know what's happening in the world. So I'm not going to be like a ostrich with my head in the sand. And my kids, I love Star Wars. We're into Star Wars again. I kind of go wherever they go, which is funny to me. I think to myself, why would you get rid of the Star Wars stuff and give it to kids that don't have any toys and go into Ghostbusters knowing they're going to do another Star Wars, and the minute they see the movie, they're going to want their lightsabers back. Like, what are you thinking, Mom? Yeah, funny.
What is the last movie you went to a movie theater to see?
We saw Star Wars, the last Star Wars. We went to the IPIC, which is a fantastic theater out here where they give you, like, blankets, and you can order food. So I surprised the kids with the Star Wars at IPIC in Pasadena.
Okay. Well, I mean, we had a great interview, and I thank you very kindly for being here. Before I let my guests go, I always ask them, what parting words they have for the listeners. So just to sum up, I guess, everything that we talked about today, or just any personal message that you have, what would you like to leave the listeners with tonight?
You know, it's interesting. I've kind of been victim of this. I guess I would hope for the world that one day that people would not judge a book by its cover. And it sounds really trivial, but people judge me a lot. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I'm quiet sometimes. And so people think, oh, her crap doesn't stink, or she thinks she's better. It's like, I don't think that at all. I'm just like, I'm a farm girl. They used to race motorcycles. I get dirty. I don't have fake nail. I mean, you know what I mean? I do my own laundry.
Yeah.
I would clean my... It's like people just have this preconceived notion sometimes of people. And I just wish that people would give people a chance. That's all.
All right. Well, you all heard it. And my parting words, just let me say, first of all, again, thank you, Amy, for being here. This was a dream thing. Okay, I have one more question. So,
okay.
I don't even know if you remember this, but did you manage your own MySpace page back around 2005, 2006? I only asked that because I was one of your friends on MySpace, and I thought I was talking to you, but I never really knew if it was you or not. So, number one, did you have a MySpace page? And two, did you manage your own MySpace page?
Yes, I did. No, absolutely. And, I mean, there came a time, I think, with Twitter and stuff where I just couldn't handle, like, all the stuff that was coming in.
Yeah.
But, yes, MySpace was so long ago. I'm sure that was all me.
Okay. So, well, then that was the first time I ever had a conversation with you. So, you know, now that just the fact that you validated that, it means more to me. But in my closing words to my listeners, I would just like to say, you know, just because you see us on television, just because you see us in films or singing or, you know, any of that, that doesn't mean we're not real people. We still have real lives. The same things that you go through, we go through. And I think Amy said it the best. You cannot judge a book by its cover. You know, I've had people tell me that, you know, because I wear an eye patch and because my facial hair is cut the way it is, you know, I had a publicist that told me I have the worst case of resting bitch face that she has ever seen. You know, yes, she did. She absolutely told me that. And, you know, the only thing that I could say to her is, well, you know, I'm sorry, but if somebody comes up and talks to me, they'll realize that I'm not this mean, evil guy that, you know, I might look like. I say all of that just to say, when you approach people, just approach them nicely, approach them in a kind way. Sometimes people get the bad reaction because of how they approach. Like if you see somebody eating dinner, let them eat dinner. If you see, especially if you see somebody with their kids, just say hello from afar. Don't rush up to them because you're automatically invading that space because their children are there. So I 100% agree. You cannot judge a book by its cover. You have to approach situations with the same respect that you would want somebody to approach you. As well, when you do meet somebody that you have seen on TV or you listen to their music, just understand that situation is only new to you. It's not new to them. So if somebody says, no, I don't feel like signing an autograph right now, please understand they may have just got finished signing 100, 200, 300 autographs or taking pictures for 10, 15, 20 minutes before you even showed up. So, I can't say it any better. Don't judge a book by its cover. Amy, again, I thank you very kindly for being here. When you have your next single out, just let me know. I will have you back on. Are you going to shoot a video for On and On?
I don't know. I've been kind of mulling that over. I think it's just a matter of finding the right concept and, I guess, finding the time.
Okay. Well, if you need a hot guy with an eye patch, you know who to call.
Nice. I love it. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. And to all my listeners, thank you very much for listening. Please join me next week. I got a doozy for you next week. So please make sure you join me. And all I can say now is we are out. Are you inspired? Can I inspire you more? Come join me every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on Station 2 here at BBS Radio. Let's get inspired together. Come join me. You'll be glad you did.